Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Samina Rahman. Remember, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. Today, I'm joined by the amazing Lauren Tettenbaum, a licensed clinical social worker, lawyer, women's rights advocate, and author of her new amazing book, Millennial Menopause, Preparing for Perimenopause, Menopause, and Life's Next Period. Lauren brings such a unique perspective, combining her legal background, mental health expertise, and passion for supporting women through transitions in identity, motherhood, career, and reproductive life. We're going to dive into what it means to navigate menopause and midlife as a millennial and why this conversation is so crucial. Hopefully this will air still in September, which is Perimenopause Awareness Month. But anyway, Lauren, welcome to SDH.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I've been a longtime fan.
Yeah, you as well. I'm super excited to have this conversation with you. And I think it's so crucial because I always say, like, I'm kind of like at this juncture between Gen X and millennials, but, you know, that we are like the generation that, what do they say? We were 30 at age 10 and now we're, you know, 30 at age, whatever, 50 people want to talk about. But it's like, you know, we're trying to reclaim sort of this moment in time too. And I'm so happy to see like so many millennials speaking up about their perimenopause and menopause experiences. But let's just dive right in. So I want to talk a little bit about your journey. Like you started out as a lawyer and then, you know, became sort of, and became a therapist and a huge women's health advocate. How did your path lead to you writing this, like in this women's, in you were in a mental health space, you were in a law space, and now you're specifically writing about millennial menopause. Tell me how that path like came to be.
So the more I think about it, the seeds were always planted. I was on stage in college doing the vagina monologues, talking about periods. I taught sex ed. Yeah. I went to law school to be a reproductive rights advocate. And through twists and turns, like we all have, I now practice in private practice as a psychotherapist, specifically supporting women and moms. And as I was in my late 30s, I realized I had no idea what was coming next. And I thought, if I don't know, what does everyone else not know? And it turns out they didn't know much.
Yeah. And you weren't being taught much and you have to learn it all by yourself for the most part, right? And so you came to decide to write this book. Like, why did you feel so compelled to write specifically toward the millennials?
I am fully a millennial girly. I know you read the book and I hope you appreciated all the fun pop culture.
I loved it. I was already mentioned like Backstreet Boys, you know, all the things. I was like, yeah.
All the things. I actually got to meet the Backstreet Boys a couple weeks ago in Vegas. So that was, you know, a life highlight.
Yeah, that was awesome. Wait, are they still in Vegas for whatever?
They wrapped up this leg of the tour and they're going again. So if anyone wants to come with me, I'm your girl. I'll go back.
Let's go.
But yeah, I think it's really important to bring levity even to difficult topics. And menopause, as you know, is universal, even though we all go through it differently. But it's important to bring our unique perspectives. And I feel like I'm a relatable therapist and healthcare provider. I talk to my clients the way I would friends, with compassion, with humor. And I wanted to write the book in the tone that reflects me authentically.
Totally. You're right. Everything that you're saying kind of came through in your book. So I loved that you were able to capture that. Do you think that millennials are approaching, I mean, we know like the poor boomers, they kind of got left out of the equation a lot because of, you know, we always talk about this, the Women's Health Initiative and everything. But are you seeing millennials approach, you know, perimenopause, menopause differently than, say, Gen X?
It's interesting. I think they're starting to, but 100%, the question that I got asked the most was, will hormone therapy cause breast cancer? So that shadow of the WHI is still very much with us. And we're still seeing providers say things like, well, you're too young, don't worry about it, or there's nothing we can do about it. So I think that we are starting to push back, but there's a lot of work to do.
Totally. And I think one of the issues that I see, like when I see someone that's, you know, in their late 30s and they come to me and they have every classic symptom of perimenopause, but they'll go into a clinician that's not as well versed and they'll find out like, oh, well, my labs are normal. So that means I'm, you know, And so they totally, and I know like the thought behind a lot of the physicians who are talking, or, you know, the people that they hear like, oh, you're too young for this. And they think that it's like somehow going to make this patient feel better. But at the end of the day, it's just totally dismissive. Like gaslighting them. You know, it's like, what? I want to know the answers. Like, tell me like what's really happening. And so I do think that there's still so much work to be done in that capacity.
Yeah. A friend said to me yesterday, and she's 45, she said, no doctor has ever mentioned the word perimenopause to me, even mentioned it. And I really think, you know, of course, it's not doctor's fault. I don't want to blame them for their lack of training, but it's time for change.
Yeah. I mean, I always say it's like we have a system that's failing women across the board. So I think what's interesting is that I do think that, you know, I would say like, well, we give kids puberty talks and, you know, they don't even know how to use it half the time. But we should start using and introducing this like cougar puberty, as they're calling it. Did you see that?
I did. A friend of mine, her little daughter who's 6, called it mommy puberty, which I liked. And of course, not every woman is a mother, but I thought it was a good way for kids to get it.
Yeah, I've told a lot of my guests this, but my 6-year-old calls it scary Perry in my household. She's like, especially if I'm like really irritated one day and I'm like off the handle, like, you know, on a yelling rampage, mama, is a scary Perry. Should I walk away?
That's great. We should name it and normalize it and talk to our kids of all ages and genders about it, because it's a natural part of human development. So it's time to get over it.
Totally. I like a lot of what you talk about and, you know, and what you stand for in terms of like dealing with women in these transitional periods of time, right? Like we always talk about it. And I always talk about like there's periods of time where we're like, we're susceptible to our transitioning hormones. There's like postpartum, there's, you know, perimenopause, there's, you know, times when people are doing fertility regimens and treatments and, you know, cancer treatments, all the things that are affecting our quality of life because these hormones are not just reproductive and sex hormones. But when you start to help people, your clients with like, you know, motherhood or career decisions or like navigating reproductive health, like how does menopause fit into that broader category or conversation of understanding who they are and their identity and everything like that?
It's, of course, a huge part of our identity, not least of which is because our culture tends to, you know, vilify it and say, oh, old lady, you know, you have no value here anymore. Anti-aging, etc. I have seen the impact of just talking about menopause and perimenopause and explaining it can be so profound, mm-hmm. because when we don't have the tools to talk about it, we feel so lonely and isolated in our experiences. We think we're imagining things. I know, you know, the phrase, I don't feel like myself, or being told it's in your head. Those are pervasive for women and they shouldn't be. Right. And I see it a lot in the context of moodiness, whether my clients are suddenly very irritable with their husbands or their kids, or they're having brain fog at work. And it is sort of a reckoning of like, well, am I old? And what does this mean for me? And we educate and provide resources. And it's been really cool to be able to do that.
I think it's interesting, too. Like there's a lot of, I just got forwarded an article today around spouses dealing with menopause. Like, you know, I think there's an article in the USA Today about men.
Menodivorce.
Uh-huh. Well, menodivorce. And then the follow-up article was like men dealing with how to navigate menopause for their spouse and their partner if they're in a heteronormative relationship. So I think it's very interesting that so many conversations are being started across the board. Do you see a lot of people that are in like this transition in relationships as well?
Totally. And I mean, frankly, in my personal life as well, I'm 40 and, you know, all my friends were going through this. And whether it is perimenopause and the hormonal changes or just a moment to reflect on your life and what makes you happy, I think a lot of women are reevaluating what they want and deserve out of a relationship.
Yeah. I always say that like men experience like a midlife crisis. But women, when they kind of get a grip on like their hormones and they get treatment, they have like midlife clarity. Like all of a sudden, like it's like, oh, this is a picture in my head that I don't need to stay with this person. Or maybe I do want to, but I just have to work at it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there often is a lot of work to be done. And this, again, is not to criticize men in general. And I happen to have an extremely supportive and equitable partner. And that's why I wrote a chapter specifically for men, because I want men to be part of this conversation and to be allies in advocating for the healthcare we deserve.
I mean, how do you think they can, like, when you talk to your clients, and maybe sometimes they probably bring in, you know, their significant mm-hmm. others, whoever they are. How do you talk to them about sort of helping their partner along this process?
So there's, again, it starts with education, psychoeducation, letting them know that this is not the moodiness, for example, the irritability, the rage. That's not the fault of the woman. And so that sets up, I think, a different narrative than what they were previously dealing with. And then helping their partner with the mental load, whether it's packing the school backpacks or researching the best local providers for hormone therapy, whatever it is that the mm-hmm. woman needs. Yeah. Really being there for her without judgment.
No, for sure. And I think just for them to even acknowledge that, you know, this mm-hmm. is something they're going through, right? Like, this is, you know,
real.
For real. And you know, people always come in the office and they're like, well, geez, every perimenopause, like, what is it? You know, and it's like, you know, it's a lot of things at once, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot of things happening to women at once.
It is. And that's why I appreciate very much the diagnosis of perimenopause. But in general, I like to treat the symptoms, not the diagnosis. So if you're stressed out or feeling stressed, what's going on? Is it something at work? Is it something at home? Is it your hormones? Is it all of the above? Let's figure it out so that you can feel better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that comes into the equation, like when we talk about the mental health struggles of women in midlife, right? Like, mm-hmm. and as a mental health specialist, how do you see sort of like anxiety, depression, OCD, you know, ADHD, you know, how is all of that being viewed in your office and impacted by perimenopause, menopause, all the things that you're seeing with it?
I am definitely seeing it. And I'm so thankful that I now see it as a hormonal shift, because until I had that education, while I was still, of course, helping my clients the best way I knew how, I didn't have that piece of referring to a doctor like you who could specialize with the biological impact, right? So I see a lot of that irritability popping up. A lot of women who I've worked with for many years will come to me now and say the old coping mechanisms that I used to use are no longer working. I don't want to be yelling, but I find myself yelling. It's mm-hmm. a little bit of a different way that anxiety and depression are popping up for them. Certainly ADHD symptoms are exacerbated. And it's just so important to know yourself and know your baseline, to know what has worked for you, and to also be open-minded that now might be time for something new.
What kind of stuff do you like help them do? You know, for someone that's, well, I've had anxiety all my life and this is like the next level and I'm on these medications. Like, what can I do from a cognitive, you know, health perspective?
Yeah. So again, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but psychoeducation is so key, because so many women have no clue that this is perimenopause. This is to be expected somewhat, and that there is help available. So many of my clients, I do guide them to have conversations with prescribers like yourself who can offer the up-to-date, accurate information on hormone therapy.
Yeah.
I, you know, certainly think that that should be a tool in our toolbox if that's sure. what they want, and it's, you know, safe and effective. And then also the cognitive behavioral approach is to interpret situations in a different way. Think about the judgment that we so often are putting on ourselves and yep. the guilt that we feel for yelling at our kids, for example, when we're in the fiery rage.
Yeah.
We can be nicer to ourselves. We can do behavioral strategies like take deep breaths, put ice on our wrists, go outside, ask for help. Things
yeah.
like
Yeah. Oh, put ice on our wrists. That's interesting. Mm.
Or yeah. on the back of your neck. That's one of my favorites.
Right.
Or cold water if you don't have ice.
Yeah. Do you find that like people that have like more anxiety versus depression versus like OCD, some of these things that they're experiencing, like, are better off doing certain types of therapies or certain tools that you'll give them? I mean, because they're also unique, right? I think that, you know, some of the cognitive behavioral therapies around desensitization and some of those things, like, do you work a lot with that as well?
I do. I like to bring in mindfulness a lot. And I was resistant personally. I used to think it was too woo-woo. And then I really practiced it and have come to appreciate it so much. And so I think that that is a huge component of what I practice and what we've seen evidence-based. It really does make a difference. I work with mostly high-achieving women who are used to fixing things and feeling this sense of urgency. And usually things aren't as urgent as they seem. So we work on that. We work on self-compassion, on acceptance, which I don't mean to make aging sound easy breezy, but I think there is so much beauty in saying, yes, I am getting older. It's an opportunity. If I don't feel good, I can get help, and thinking about it that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, take me through, like, you know, a small mindfulness exercise that you give your clients.
Sure. I mean, there's just box breathing, 4 counts in, hold for 4, 4 counts out. Just turning off screens is tremendous.
Yeah.
Taking a shower and mindfully noticing the water course over your body, or going back to cold water on your hands, washing your hands, really anything. And that's the gift of mindfulness, that you can implement it wherever you are. Mm-hmm. If you're on a subway and it's crowded and loud, you can still sit, close your eyes, focus on your breathing. And if thoughts pop up, you can tell yourself, okay, I'm having these thoughts. They're not good or bad, right? Just notice them without judgment.
Right. It's really about awakening other senses too, right? Like, it's kind of like,
yeah, you can do the 5 senses, 5 things you see, 4 things you hear, things like that. And every person is different, but really just the pause makes all the difference, which is why I sort of laugh, because, you know, let's put the pause back in menopause.
I like that. It's true, though, because we're always going long, especially because we have so much that we carry, like the burdens that we carry as women, right? So,
yeah.
What do you, like, there's so much, you know, shame around aging and around, you know, I always talk about how, like, ageism in this country is so significant that even though, you know, it feels like, at least in our silos, that, like, we hear everything about menopause and, for me, sex med too, it's like, you know, this is all I'm hearing ever. But when I, sometimes when I'm out speaking to other people, it's really the first time they're hearing about it. Totally. And so, like, how do you help them dismantle the shame around it? And start sort of rewrite, you know, how do you help them navigate their quick reality check? If you're listening to this and thinking, why does no one ever talk to me like this in my doctor's office? That's because most doctors aren't trained to, nor do they have the infrastructure for it. That's why I started the GYN and Sexual Medicine Collective, my new concierge practice, where sexual wellness, hormone health, and gynecology actually come together like they're supposed to. No 10-minute visits, no gaslighting, no have a glass of wine, relax. Just evidence-based, shame-free care for women who are done settling for bad sex, brain fog, hot flashes, or feeling invisible. I'm proud to be part of the Ms. Medicine Network, which means your care is rooted in science, not stigma. Find us at www.thegsmcollective.com and book the kind of appointment you wish you had had years ago. Your body called. It wants its power back. Let's go. A new story for them, even, you know?
Well, I wish I had a simple answer. Of course, it's not simple. And I will tell you that to this day, I tell people I wrote a book about menopause, and people, you know, will give me a weird look and think, oh, menopause. And I call them out on it because I don't give a shit.
Absolutely.
I'm like, oh, you have a problem with women's bodies and aging. I do really strongly believe in a gratitude practice. We have all seen tragedy in our world, in our lives, and aging can be difficult. Again, I'm not trying to make it sound like it's easy breezy, but what a privilege it is, right? And I really believe in that.
Absolutely.
And I think with women especially, there's unfortunately so much pressure to look a certain way, to be youthful, always to be fertile. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had a solution to tell women, just embrace this new body. You're not supposed to look the way you did at 20. Yeah. And I do believe that, but I also understand that it's a tough position to be in. Yeah. So I think as much self-love you can give yourself, go for it.
Yeah, I know. No, I think that's probably one of the best things someone's ever told me about is really gratitude journaling. And I think that as you kind of approach like the mid age of your life, you're right. I mean, it's a gift to be able to age. And I think that when you lose someone you love, you know, I think that's what's so eye opening. When I lost my mom this year, it really woke me up. Like, what am I really doing? Like, what do I want to do? Like, what are all the things that I feel like are really critical in this world? Because, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know,
we've only got one.
You're trying, you know, and you can't take half of what you're trying to your goals, whatever they are, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't take half of it with you to the grave.
Right. No, and that's so beautiful. Thank you.
You know, and so it's like, you really have to, and actually I've been doing a lot of, you know, in-depth evaluation around even sort of like people that have near-death experiences and some of these things that they talk about. And a lot of it comes down to really like what you're talking about, really self-love and loving the people around you, because you don't have much more that is left, you know, when it's like coming toward the end of life. I know this sounds so depressing now, but
but it's a reflection opportunity, right? And if you are feeling the ick about aging, let's wonder why. Are you not feeling fulfilled in certain areas? Is it your changing body, which there are things that we can work on? And I think it's important to really reflect and think about what is important to you so that you can live your life according to those values. And that's where acceptance and commitment therapy comes in again.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful, actually. Because you used to practice law, right? For how long were you a lawyer?
So I worked in the legal industry for 10 years. I had gone to school. I went straight to law school, hated the first year. Also got my master's in social work. So I always practiced law with the lens of mental health and empathy and compassion. I practiced immigration law for a while, which I enjoyed very much. I'm the daughter of an immigrant. I always wanted to use my privilege to help those who didn't have what I had.
Yeah.
And when I became a mom, I knew I needed a bit of a shift. So I worked in personnel roles, and then COVID happened and I thought, moms really need mental health support. Yeah. Women really need mental health support. So I'm going to focus on that.
Oh, that's beautiful. And so do you sometimes ever, like, I mean, because you said that you used a lot of your mental health skills in law. Mm. Are you seeing like your ability to use your law degree in what you're doing now?
I think so. That's what I love about social work. Not that it's exclusive to social workers, but social workers do have the mental health, the psychology background, and the social justice advocacy component. And I think that educating people, raising awareness about issues like women's inaccess to the healthcare they deserve, that is a way to use law and policy, encouraging people to vote for local officials, encouraging people to pay attention is really, I mean, it sounds minor, but it's major. And so I think that my background of using my voice does come up.
That's great. Yeah. I love that, actually. I think that's really great. And I think it's very powerful, actually, especially because what's happening in our world these days. Like, the world's on fire around us. And so it's like nice to know that, like, you know, you can kind of center things that way and also try to push for advocacy in whatever capacity you can.
And that's why, you know, menopause might sound out of character for a lawyer turned therapist, but it's not, because we're talking about women's mental health. We're talking about women's rights and bodily autonomy. And this book, yes, is about menopause, but it's about women. And it's been such a privilege to write it and to connect with other women about it.
Well, and also, like, we see that, I don't know how in the mental health world is probably similar, but like, even if you just look at, you know, our legal system and how it's changed for, you know, women's reproductive rights, of course, you know, we know that the more things in place that prevent us from continuing to do research on women, right? Like all of these areas are going to like ripple effect and eventually have, you know, potentially very dramatic effects on our ability to either access our care or, you know, even
learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or get period supplies in schools or get taxed on them, things like that, that we don't think of as part of the conversation, but they very much are. Absolutely. Sex ed.
Yeah. No, of course. Yeah. And so I think that the changing landscape is really profound, actually.
Profound is one word.
So fucked up, right? Anyway, what do you think one thing millennial women can start doing today to better prepare themselves for this next period of life, as you said?
I love a pun. So yeah. I really believe knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this in the book, but we know that women who have had depression, for example, in the past, are more susceptible to having another depressive episode during perimenopause.
Right.
Now, that might sound scary and alarming to some, but I view that as knowledge is power. And I similarly felt that way when I was becoming a mom, because I've had my own mental health struggles. And when I was told that perinatal mood and anxiety disorders are quite common, quite reoccurring for women who have had them before, I set myself up for success. I got a reproductive psychiatrist. I talked about it openly with my husband, my friends, things like that. I read about it. I learned about it. I knew what to look out for so that I could be best cared for. And that's what I feel about perimenopause and menopause in general, not just the mental health component, but reminding yourself that it might happen and it might be tough, but resources are available. So just learn yourself, know what your normal is, know if things are starting to bother you and be different. And of course, the good old fashioned good sleep, good nutrition.
Yeah.
Weightlifting. I started weightlifting. That was something that I immediately changed when I was researching. I said, I better get to the gym. Yeah. But it's good. It's never too late or too early.
And I think, bringing up the whole motherhood picture, we know that, that when women are in the peri-postpartum state, we have, high rates of mental health issues that lead to maternal mortality, right? Like we know
it's the highest
reason for maternal mortality. And so how do you help those patients? Like, and there's this whole concept of like how so many of women are having pregnancies later in life. And so some people go straight from postpartum into perimenopause. So I think there's so many elements there, right? But I think how do you, because I always found, even as an OBGYN, like the one thing that we learned the least about in the obstetrics world is really how to take care of a postpartum patient. And that's why in my practice, like I really focus on fourth trimester care because I don't do obstetrics anymore. But I found that to be very compelling, not only as a doctor, but as someone that went through three postpartum periods. And every time I learned something, I was like, okay, my next one, I'm going to make sure this happens. And by the time my third one hit, I was like, I'm going to get it right this time. But how do you help someone like a first time mom navigate that? Because I feel like no one really, you're just so set up to deal with a baby. You're not set up to deal with how your body's changing, what's going to happen, how you feel sexually, how you feel mentally, all the things. So because it sounds like you work a lot with the moms too.
I do. And I love it. And it's been really cool to work with women who are actually simultaneously postpartum and entering into perimenopause. I think every woman or parent, whether you're the birthing parent or not, deserves a therapist or some sort of support system as they enter into this new chapter. Mm-hmm. Because even if you're not having a quote unquote disorder, it's a tremendous change.
Huge.
And knowing that you're not alone in navigating it, whatever it is, that's the key, right? And giving those tools to watch out for, obviously we want to watch out for emergency issues like psychosis and also get them medication if that's what they need. But just the simple resource to say, this is a tough day, or I haven't been outside today, what's happening with me? We want people to feel supported, and mom's mental health is the best predictive factor of a healthy child. So we need to pay more attention to this.
I totally agree with you. And I think that, when they say it takes a community or a village, it's true. And so at some point, I know not everyone can potentially access the additional care that they need to help them navigate it. But if you can, that's one thing I always recommend, who's doing what in the house and how much of that is falling on you. And You know, are you exclusively horse feeding? Are you exclusively like, you know, is that, and that burden then comes on you if you can't pump, then it's always mom that has to do everything. I mean, there's so many factors that play into your inability to get the rest you need. And then at the end of the day, that trickles into your whole life, like
everything,
you know, it could affect your whole function, your relationships, everything. So it's,
which speaks to paid leave policies for both mom and dad. So going back to how the macro affects the micro.
Yeah. And, you know, not only paid leave, but also like, you know, childcare support. Like I know there's so many bills that have attempted to do this, which are stalled and stalled and stalled. You know, they'll never get, you know, that issue for the people that probably need it the most. Whereas, you know, we see that in European countries, so many of these things are accessible, or, you know, other countries.
Yeah.
So, and even if you look at how other women experience postpartum in different cultures, no one's expected to do it alone, and no one's expected to go back to work after 6 to 12 weeks. You know,
I talk about this every day, but I still have goosebumps talking about it because it's infuriating.
Yeah.
And women deserve so much better. So all parents, but I work specifically with women, so I'm going to focus on that. I do just want to plug Postpartum Support International. It's a nonprofit that provides free warm line support. So if anyone is struggling, you can just go on and call someone and or text them and get a message back. So yes, we have an inequitable system of healthcare in this country, but free resources are available. So
we'll put that in the show notes for sure, so that we are, if so people can access that. But I think that's why I look at the most. I mean, I have, you know, friends who, you know, grew up in different countries, and, you know, they talk about how, you know, they got 12 weeks, people were around them doing everything for the baby. They were there, they were getting fed,
have food,
you know, I just remember coming home, like after my first kid, and then like, having to figure out like the dinner that night. It's so boring. I was like, what? Wait, I have to figure out.
What? That's my worst part about being a mom, is thinking about other people's meals. I don't cook.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, I hate every minute in the kitchen, but it's true. Like, you know, you think about like, come home, oh wait, I have to deal with this now. And so with each pregnancy, I think, you know, spouses learn too, like they learn how to support you better, because they're also new at it too, right? Like I think that's what's the other interesting thing, is that, like, you know, they don't know what they're doing either. They actually have to be told as well, because it's such a shift for both, you know, if there's two moms, two dads, or husband and wife, you know, whatever the case may be.
Right. But that's why communication is so important. Again, going back to talking about it, because if you're struggling with the mental load, let's assume your partner isn't aware, also wants the best for you, for the family. So let's come up with tools to talk about it. And I do a lot of that work in my practice as well.
That's awesome. Well, Lauren, thank you so much. You know, I loved having this conversation with you. I have this thing that I've been starting to do on this podcast, because my husband says, you know, he actually calls my listeners like the Vagilante Nations.
Love it.
So I get this thing called the Vagilante Verdict. Like, what's your hot take? Which you've given so many, but like, if were the last final hot take that you would, or a Vagilante Verdict that you would.
I love puns. I think that's like so fabulous.
What do you tell the listeners?
You don't have to be suffering in order to get support. You deserve support now and always, and it's available.
Very nice. Yeah, I think that's key. I feel like there's help available. There are people out there, and there's no shame in finding a therapist, right? Like, I feel like I agree with you. I feel like everyone should, you know,
it's an automatic gift.
You know, I feel like even, you know, for me, you know, just even going through the grief that I did, like having a grief counselor, you know, some of these things were so beneficial to helping navigate, but, you know, there's so much stigma that's been associated with it that I know a lot of people still have a hard time, especially in certain cultures, right? We have that huge in certain cultures. So.
Yeah. Well, if you want to put it bluntly, I would say fuck the stigma.
Yes. There you go. I love it. Perfect ending. FTS. I'm just kidding.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much. That's awesome. All right. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for joining me today. There's going to be show notes about how people can get in touch with you and get your book and all the things. For listeners, you can find Lauren at the counselor that like that's really
yes, sure. Because lawyers and therapists provide counseling. So
another pun. and pick up Millennial Menopause wherever books are sold out, Amazon and all the bookstores. And just remember, you know, listeners, you're not too young for menopause or perimenopause, and there's no shame in admitting that this might be happening to you, because it can start as early as your late 30s. And so it's really about preparing for it without like the fear associated with it, because I think that's how we're going to do better than our previous generations. Anyway, I'm Dr. Smita Ron, Gyno Girl. Thanks for listening to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Remember, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. Please join me next week. If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.